Remember, remember the 5th of November, the gunpowder, treason, and plot. I know of no reason why the gunpowder treason should ever be forgot.
Everyone's asleep. Everyone but me. And I can't help feel like I'm doing this all by myself.
We live in the shadow of crime, resigned to be the victims of fear, of violence, of social impotence.
You step outside, you risk your life. You take a drink of water, you risk your life. And nowadays you breathe, and you risk your life.
The dollar buys a nickel's worth. Banks are going bust. Shopkeepers keep a gun under the counter. Punks are running wild in the street, and there's nobody anywhere who seems to know what to do, and there's no end to it.
That is why we distance ourselves. That's why we make jokes. We don't do it because it's fun. We do it so we can get by. And sometimes, because it's fun.
Your levity is good. It relieves tension and the fear of death.
Ladies and gentlemen, fellow slaves of the plantation, welcome to the Vinny Eastwood Show. It's Vinny with a Y because it's the most important question. And Eastwood, like, go ahead, make my news. It's the lighter side of genocide. Just because we're being exterminated doesn't mean we can't make it fun. Otherwise, what's the point of being killed? The Vinny Eastwood Show. The only thing worse than the truth is Vinny's jokes.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to yet another exciting episode of the Vinny Eastwood Show, broadcasting live on American Freedom Radio for all of the GCSB and SIS and CIA and NSA that I know you've been craving this. You know, it's bad for you. I know. You look at the Vinnie Eastwood aisle when you go through the supermarket and you think to yourself, well, it's very tempting. It'd be so bad for my thighs. Now, my very special guest today is Dr. Huhana Hickey, who is a smooth operator. Huhana, welcome to the program.
Thank you. Never been accused of being a smooth operator before.
Well, when you're in a wheelchair, you can't be anything but. Now, would you mind giving us a little bit of background on who you are and what it is you do?
Oh, kia ora. My name's Huhana. They call me Dr. Who for short. I reckon that's the only reason I got my PhD, because I'm a bit of a Whovian. What do? I have a background in human rights law, psychology, and that's what I got my PhD in, was law and tikanga Māori. I'm currently lecturing at AUT in Auckland, and as you can see, I'm in my teaching environment right now, but I've got a break, so perfect timing. I'm a bit of an activist, a bit of a stirrer, a bit of a troublemaker sometimes.
Now, the first time I met you was actually at the medical marijuana march, I believe it was last year, around this time last year, actually.
That's right.
And instead of doing your speech in your wheelchair, you actually wanted to stand up, and me and another guy gave you a hand and stuff, so showing a bit of strength there. So the concept that we really wanted to discuss today is cannabis, and a lot of the some of the elements that I wanted to really talk about is moral turpitude. Like if you've got people who are suffering and dying, and you have the ability to help them, and you choose not to, that's evil, right? In my opinion. And the other element here that we got is a broad brush public ignorance based upon the statements of these quote unquote evil people who do what I just mentioned.
Well, you know, ironically, when I started on this journey, I was very anti recreational cannabis. And I wanted to see tight regulation. And I think part of it was informed by the fact that Māori have a major problem with being jailed for being for drugs and alcohol and the health outcomes. And but I have to say that my thinking has shifted rather dramatically as I've gotten further into the journey. I found that medicinal cannabis works very well for me, but I'm also finding the cost to be hugely exorbitant, and the generic products that are available don't meet all my needs, and they won't meet the needs of many people because it's too generic, too broad. You need individualized items, or you need individualized strains to suit the need for your condition as you need it. And the problem you've got with that is we don't have that available. I now believe that we need to be able to self-grow or have access to green fairies, and that the recreational market can easily financially support the medicinal market. So that if you wish to for recreational, that there be rules, no access for children if it's got THC, limited access for women who are pregnant, but education and health can sort a lot of that out. And then what we have is a medicinal arm that you're listed under medicine. You have a practitioner who's a specialist in developing these products for your needs, and that they can assist you with the medicinal for free whilst being able to sell balms and cookies and a whole range of products for a cost to the market. It's also part of the reason that my mind has changed on that is that alcohol's more damaging. And the synthetic psychoactive drugs that are out there at the moment that they're calling cannabis when it's not is also killing people. We have to look at something. We've got to look at it urgently. And I believe the only way forward is if we legalise in New Zealand, provide some guidelines and limitations on age and guidelines around the use of, but allowing us to dictate that market. New Zealand has the environment, we have the skills, and we have the ability to do that. And that's what I believe.
But unfortunately, we have corrupt roadblocks in the way. For example, Peter Dunn, who is allegedly tied to alcohol and tobacco lobbies. We haven't been able to dig up precise evidence on that, so he's simply good at covering his tracks. Now, he's the one who systematically for the last decade agreed with each and every successive parliament that he's been a part of to have no forward movement, more or less, on the issue of medicinal or recreational cannabis, for that matter. And guess who the manufacturer of the synthetic cannabis in New Zealand is? His son.
His son's the lawyer for the manufacturers, and there's a conflict of interest there, and that needs to be recognised. I don't think it's so much Dunn that's holding it up. It was actually John Key and Bill English who are totally against. And doesn't matter if you're in coalition, Peter Dunn is only one person, and the leaders of the National Party are saying no. And that's a huge problem with the election coming up, that when people are voting and if they want to legalise medicinal cannabis, then they need to look at who they're voting for. And there is one party that's blocking that, and that is the National Party. They've said no, they will not legalise. There are members in the National Party that are actually for it, but the leader himself is not, and that's the big problem. What we've got to do is we need people to get very clever with their voting, and MMP is the best environment we can get. If we were clever, you vote for the party that's got the strongest policy, but then you vote for the individual you choose to vote for. People don't know how to do that, and I think we have got to, we've got to send a strong message. I did feel that the announcements the last 2 weeks around different parties and what's going on is opening the door up more to change than what I've seen for the last few months. And that we may actually be closer towards legalisation or at least decriminalisation than we have been at any other time in New Zealand's history.
One can only hope.
I'm hoping.
Well, what happened is, well, as Aomer said, do not trust to hope. It is forsaken in these lands. Now, there is the... what was the other thing I was going to say is it's about in terms of being able to grow yourself and things of that nature, it's not necessarily voting that I'm feeling is actually going to change this. It's not like MMP some sort of silver bullet. No. If we weren't living in a prime ministerial dictatorship, if we had human rights in this country, we would already be able to grow our own cannabis without those problems.
We need to be sensible. I mean, how much harm can a balm do, for goodness sake? If, you know, balms, I one and I tried it. From bursitis in my shoulder.
Well, sorry, Huhana, can you stop right there? Can you just start what you said again? There was a little bit of a glitch.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I don't understand how a balm could be illegal because it has CBD in it. I mean, CBD absorbs, THC does, so it doesn't even matter if you apply THC, it won't work. But the CBD does. And what I find really weird, I got sent some balm and I tried it and I was in terrible pain and within 5 minutes I'd forgotten. And it was half an hour later I realised I'd applied the balm and I'm not in pain anymore because I just carried on, did what I was doing. But the pain had gone. And so why are we not allowing a balm edibles. They're not dangerous to have edibles. Why are we not looking at those? Because the only option people have, which is still illegal, is smoking. And the two legal ones that are out of the price range. But when you smoke, you lose 70% of their medicinal effect, and it creates the psychoactive effect. Now, I'm not saying smoking's not an answer for medicinal, but I am saying that there's so many other options, and they're not dangerous at all. So what are they afraid of when they won't allow those very benign but very healing options in?
They're afraid of cutting into the profits of the pharmaceutical industries for which, if you have any kind of health disability in this country, is the first and last port of call for all New Zealand trained medical doctors who were trained in our medical system under the Rockefeller model of medicine, which is a pill for every ill. The body cannot be encouraged to heal itself. Only doctors can do that, but it's illegal to cure you. And we can only give you illegal, we can only give you incredibly dangerous drugs that haven't been tested yet on animals or something or anything like that, and haven't passed any safety trials, but we're just going to give them to you anyway. And then when you die from them or commit suicide from your antidepressants, we go, oh, they must have just had problems with it or something. You know, let's just blame the people that we gave the drugs to as opposed to the drugs we actually gave them.
Well, I was on over 100 drugs a day, and it was morphine, gabapentin, tramadol, codeine, DHC, continuum, paracetamol. Did you know I'm only on one Sativex at the most, about three times a week now? All the other pain relief is gone. I'm on two other regular drugs, omeprazole, Losec, and Zoplicone, three of them. The rest are supplements, magnesium and that type of thing, all health supplements. Now, that means that the pharmaceutical, Pharmac, no longer have to subsidise me for those drugs, but they're refusing to pay for what's working. And it comes down to their own prejudice. And there's two board members on Pharmac who need to go because they won't open their mind up to the legalisation. I don't know the names, but I know that there are two doctors who sit on the Pharmac board that are vehemently opposed to medicinal cannabis. And while they've legally allowed Sativex and Tilray, they're refusing to allow any subsidising. And I think that's a problem. I also believe that our pharmaceutical industry will save an awful lot of money with the removal of a lot of those drugs from people's daily routine. And it means that they can then put that money into some of the drugs that are really expensive for things like cancer. For some of the things that do work that are out of the price range of a lot of people, and allow us the cheap access to medicinal cannabis. It will save money.
On top of that, well, the article that I read out on the show a couple of weeks ago was about the introduction of new cannabis products and CBD oils and things like that were now available for prescription. And a friend of mine said that he was able to get one from the some apothecary in Kingsland or something like that in Auckland here. However, after going through the article and applying my cynicism first and then my logic second, I found that my cynicism was more logical than my logic. So so you go, okay, what are they going to do? They're going to tell everybody, oh, you can get it now, but they're not going to subsidize it. They're going to keep it prohibitively expensive, and there'll be bugger all people that would actually prescribe it anyway. And therefore, it's like doing nothing at all.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's the hypocrisy that exists within our system. Because what we're doing also is we're shoring up what is essentially a Western-based health system. When Chinese medicine acknowledged many, many centuries beforehand the benefits of medicinal cannabis, and Maori medicine had a similar plan, which numbed everything they used. And also other cultures have been using cannabis. Indian culture have been using cannabis for many, many centuries in
That's
their medicine.
That's why it's known as Ganja, after the Ganga River, which used to have a lot of cannabis growing.
Exactly. And also, we only really allow a Western framework to inform us around our medicines and the application of healthcare. Why are we not looking at options and alternatives? I mean, you know, it's as simple as saying, instead of giving a drug for pain all the time, why not have access for someone to get access to even the cost of a spa pool so that they can actually have a spa once a day, which would relieve their rheumatisms or their arthritis. And that would work out cheaper as well than having anti-inflammatories. I mean, there's a whole bunch of options we could take, but we take the Western road. And it's not the best road for implementing good health for people who don't want to rely on chemicals for well-being.
Now, I want to give a plug here to James Corbett from the Corbett Report. I just watched a video that he did some time ago called Rockefeller Medicine. Now, initially during the late 1800s, there were a number of different practices that were considered Western medicine: homeopathy, chiropractic, even acupuncture was starting to be used in Western culture. Now, the Rockefeller Foundation started to create drugs out of oil derivatives based upon the allopathic medicine model. Allopathic medicine came out of bloodletting, you know. Do you know what bloodletting is, ladies and gentlemen? Mm. It's when you think you've got bad spirits in your blood. So when you're sick, they cut you open and you bleed heaps and that'll cure you. And in actual fact, it wound up killing a whole lot of people. And then they also had surgery without anesthetic and things like that. Allopathic medicine killed the majority of people that had the surgery. And so Rockefeller Foundation hires this guy named Flexner to conduct the Flexner Report. He goes around to all the medical schools in the United States and grades them as from good to bad. And guess which medicine schools all got really good ratings? The ones who taught the Rockefeller model of medicine and the allopathic model of medicine. Everything else got given a very severely bad rating. And then, come 1950s, allopathic medicine became not only the first above all, but virtually the only medical practice that you can really access in the United States. And we've been suffering under a Rockefeller medical monopoly globally ever since, including in China during the 1950s when Rockefellers financed a bunch of spokespeople to tell the Chinese nationals essentially that their style of medicine was better than Chinese traditional medicine. And then they started to adopt, and here we are.
But ironically, we are returning to alternatives. And, I mean, they even now apply leeches again to cure certain conditions or to relieve certain conditions. So leeches were seen as as a weird way out thing, but they do apply them again now and it's working. So with better knowledge, new technologies, new understandings, some of the older practices are actually returning because they work. And they have always worked. And it's a bit like when women were midwives for many centuries, then men came along and became doctors. Then what they did is removed women from midwifery and made men the midwives through being called, what is it?
Middlemen?
But they became the doctors who dealt with women, and they put women in stirrups, for instance, to give birth. And what's happened now is women now walk and stand up to give birth, or they do other methods because we've gone back to things that work. And so instead of throwing everything out, the baby out with the bathwater, we need to be examining some of these alternatives and say maybe some of these do work and return them. And one of those things is medicinal cannabis. We had them in New Zealand. Do you know doctors used to prescribe to the old emphysemics a certain cigarette in the 1920s and 30s because it had cannabis in it and it opened the airways of emphysemic. And so,
what were those? The lucky strikes?
Yes. I think it was the old Camels, actually, but I can't remember the name of it. But we also, if you look at the old medicines, they had cannabis in it. They also had morphine, laudanum, and a whole range of heroin and cocaine and a whole heap of stuff. But the point is they had cannabis in it. Pharmacists used to make them up. Now, why can we not have a similar model, dispensaries, but made up of those experts out there that know how to mix the different strains, know how to grow the different strains, and know how to make the balms, make the oils, make the edibles or the medibles? And why can we not, therefore, start experimenting with something more natural but returning back to some of those things? Western medicine on its own does not work in the current form it's in. People dying of cancer, Helen Kelly, good example, our Kiwi girl who passed away, but she lived longer than they expected and she died a good death because even though she was dying, she was able to die where it was really only the last week of her life that she'd stopped, lost contact with people. All that other time, she was in contact helping people and living fully by having cannabis for tea in a drink, or having it as a balm, or taking it as a medible or as an oil in itself. And it sustained her and gave her a quality of life she would not have had on morphine and all those other drugs out there that kind of take that away. If we're going to talk things like euthanasia, if we're going to talk things like dying with dignity, can we not talk about also, well, I don't want to be euthanized, but I would like to know that I could have a very good death using medicinal cannabis as a process of helping me die with a good quality of life, you know, with less pain, a bit more cognitive, and be able to do the things I want to do as I go to that journey at the end of my life. And I'm now of the mind that I can't afford to buy any more of the legal form. And so I'm of the mind that I may have to explore going illegal. And it's simply because I'm not prepared to go back to morphine, gabapentin. I'm prepared to break the law in order to, because it is unjust. And I'm prepared to do that. Now, I haven't been because I don't want to, because of my work, but I may not have a choice. So it's something I have to consider. And I think that's really unfair for anyone who has to make the choice, who's otherwise law-abiding, to have to go down an illegal road because they have no choice for their health and well-being.
You know what's problematic is a lot of people go, oh, well, life isn't fair. And you just go, look, there's a slight difference between life not being fair for everybody and life being a right scumbag to most people, all right? You know, that's the thing.
The 1%ers like to make our life easier. They like to make our life more unfair. They have the resources, the money to get all of this, and they can be as illegal as they like, corrupt as they like. But as soon as a poor person who wants the same access and wants the same quality of life, we're told life isn't fair. Well, I've got news for you. We can redistribute our wealth a lot fairer than what we're currently doing. How about charge the water companies for the water they're stealing out of our pristine waters? How about charging the corporates a fair tax for being in our country instead of charging poor people secondary tax for wanting to have a second job? How about redistributing fairer? And then life will never be fully fair, but at least we have a better say over it.
Yeah, well, it's prioritization. It's like, do you prioritize the $1.2 billion worth of unpaid corporate tax, or do you prioritize the $30 million worth of unpaid benefit fraud? Let's pick on those beneficiaries. Kill them! Kill them!
Considering the level of investments that the National Party members have in foreign companies and in our water rights and in a whole range of other things, they are really not that interested in fairly taxing the corporations. They're very interested in jailing a woman penalising, say, a single parent who had to take in an extra boarder in order to feed her kids, than they are in getting Peter Thiel to pay his fair amount of tax in this country when he doesn't even live here, but he's got permanent residency. The corruption is huge. When the Prime Minister's wife wins a contract for suicide prevention because she sits on the board that got the tender by the government, you have to ask yourself, why did Lifeline lose the 800,000 when they've been around a lot longer and been doing, well, you know, they saved my life a few times. Why does it that the Prime Minister's wife, that people don't see the conflict of interest between that and him being Prime Minister and them getting a $1.3 million contract or something?
I love the timing of it as well. The timing of it was brilliant. Announcement. New Zealand, highest suicide rate in the frickin' world for teenagers. And what do we do about that? We cut funding to suicide prevention.
Absolutely. That really makes sense, doesn't it? That's the thing I'm having a problem with. Not just for medicinal cannabis, but the problem I've got is the gatekeepers are feathering their own future nests at the cost of every Joe and Joanne that lives in New Zealand, at the cost of anyone coming here.
Now, I had investigative journalist Ben Vigen in my office here just this morning. He's been staying here for a couple of days, and we've done some incredible work exposing a lot of the scumbaggery of this country. But what the real problematic issue is the public ignorance of the scumbaggery in this country. We cannot actually change the reality of this country until people accept it.
People seem to think it's okay for the Prime Minister to make claims on rent on his own property that he owns and then just to pay it back and nobody worries about it. But, oh, no, Materia was trying to feed her child and ended up having a border and not declaring that border. But, oh, no, 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 she can't lead. But he can lead, but she can't. And she's offering to pay it back. We had to push him to pay back his money. You know, Paula Bennett's been suspiciously quiet on this entire thing, and it could be because there's a few questions around her own behaviour when she was a beneficiary. And well, what about all these other MPs that have been in the past that are suddenly all quiet? You know, they don't want people to investigate too far in their own investments and what they're up to. And it seems that the Todd Barclay affair seems to have disappeared. He's sitting back in Parliament, sitting pretty, while everyone is attacking the opposition. But he was very constructive and bullying and getting rid of a loyal office person who had been working for them for many, many years. So, you know, if we're going to lay the blame at the poor, let's also get a balance and look at what the rich are doing.
Now, the president of Uruguay just came out recently, I think it was yesterday, saying that the rich should be banned from politics.
Yes.
And I was like, never even thought of that concept before. And then my mind started clicking it over, the gears start turning, and I'm like, uh-huh, that'll work. Oh, my God, he's right. If you've got a hell of a lot of money and a hell of a lot of privilege, you don't give a F about people. You can't be their leader and be their leader.
Well, look what's happening with Trump at the moment. I mean, he's mixed his business interests, his family interests with being president. I think it's not so much that the rich shouldn't be leading, but the rich should not be benefiting. If they own companies, if they own businesses, if their partners own businesses and companies, they should not be allowed to apply or be on any trust that makes a decision around any contracts. It influences, as soon as someone knows that Judith Collins' wife or husband, I think I call him wife, if her husband has got a company that wants water rights, that wants our Totara swamp, our Cody swamp, I think it is, Cody, yes, our Cody swamp, and make money out of it, he should not be allowed. His company should not be allowed to contract. We have to separate their personal interests, financial interests, business interests from them being a representative of this country. And the lobby groups, we need to know who they are. We need to know why they're lobbying certain parties and giving them money. We should not be allowing donations coming from companies to particular parties if it is that they're doing it to lobby. We should be banning those type of corporate donations. Let's make it fair across the board that all parties have the right to, you know, do what they do, but they shouldn't be receiving donations from the wealthy and from the corporations who then go on to influence. And I'm reminded of the case of Liu, who he was the guy, the Chinese guy who paid to come into New Zealand because he's wealthy. And then what he did is he turned around and committed a crime, and then he was expecting the National Party to back him up, you know, and get away with it. He shouldn't be allowed to do that. And the problem you've got is a lot of these immigrants are coming in from countries where paying a minister is normal. We have to get rid of that culture. We can't have that culture in New Zealand. It has to go.
One person I saw posting up a petition about all of these things that you need to really be worried about, you know, the environment, biology, and the politics, and the money, and the economy, and the so on and so forth, and all these things that are really important to New Zealand. And I said to her, well, where's the alcoholism ignoring reality on that list as well? I thought we were talking about New Zealand.
Well, you know, I remember Muldoon calling a snap election when he was drunk. And I think Winston was his junior whip at that time drinking. I think he learnt how to drink the whiskey on him too. We have a unique opportunity to make New Zealand stand out as a non-corrupt country. It used to stand out for that. But I can't say we're the same anymore. We've Americanized ourselves so much that it's blurred the lines. And I think what we've got to do is come back to not blurring the lines. And that's what will make the difference.
Now, in order to have a country that doesn't have corruption, we'd need to have something called a corruption prevention framework.
Yes.
For example, if under the Local Government Act, just for example, if you procure a contract and you don't tell them
what the scope of the contract is, what the amount, what the value of that contract is, and what the contract's even about, and it's not available for public scrutiny or anything like that, how are you going to prevent corruption? You can't.
We need now, an independent corruption board.
Now, we don't have... We don't even have rules for the judges. We don't have any rules for the politicians. We don't have any rules for the councillors. We don't have any rules for the police. We don't have any rules for any section of society in New Zealand that actually holds any power. Now, that's what's problematic about it, is that democracy doesn't work if the powerful are not kept in check. And that's what journalism is actually about, is about telling people,
anti-corruption. Yeah, we need an anti-corruption system, and we don't have that. We need an independent anti-corruption authority that can oversee any whiff of corruption, any taste of corruption, and that needs to be independent. It needs to be non-politically appointed. It needs to be appointed from an independent panel that crosses all parties so that it becomes an equal decision of who sits on there. The problem we've got is there's been far too many politically biased appointments. I sit on a tribunal. The last 9 years, it's been all National Party appointments that even the chairperson has had no say in. And that becomes dangerous because you've got to have the variation of voices and skills and mindset so that you're not getting that nepotism that exists, where if a question comes in about the National Party or whatever party's in power, that we're able to independently assess it without bias. We can't do that. When ministries bully the chairperson to keep me off because they are threatened by my sitting on their cases, then we have to question, where is their ability to be unbiased? You know, I do my best to be unbiased by sitting there and saying I want to hear both sides of the story. Why can they not trust that? Because I think they have so much corruption within the ministries as well, that they are too scared of anyone that could evolve it or expose it or be able to make it public.
And we've for every one of us that strikes at the branches of tyranny, there are very few that strike at the root. And it behooves us, I think, to pay attention specifically to the things that make us feel uncomfortable, for the things that we don't like, for the things that we don't agree with. Those are the things that are actually more important to listen to and understand than the things we do support and we do like, because that puts in our own bias. And if we are capable of listening to everybody about everything, then we're capable of making a holistic decision based upon all available information rather than a belief structure based upon an ideological cul-de-sac called Rogernomics.
And, you know, it's okay to disagree with something and still be able to support it because it's fair to be across the board representing everyone. And I'll take the America's Cup as a point in hand. I know that the Pride weeks don't get anywhere near $400,000. That would actually cover 3 Pride events over 3 years. And yet overnight they found $400,000 for the America's Cup win to do the parades, right? I don't support the America's Cup. I think it's a rich man's game and shouldn't be the taxpayer or the ratepayer covering those costs. It should be private enterprise only because it is a private enterprise sport. However, the majority wanted it, so we got it. Now, that's fair, but how about giving us a little bit of reciprocity? Why aren't we dealing with the homelessness with that $400,000? Why are we not supporting other non-sports? Why is it we don't televise Paralympics or don't televise disability sports? Why is it we don't televise women's sports as fairly or as much as men's sports? So why should I, as a woman who's disabled, why should I have to support that sport when very few Māori are involved, very few women, well, no women are really involved in the front line of it? Why do I have to support that, but they can't support my interests, which are disability, Māori, social justice interests? Why do I not get that support? Why is it we can give the All Blacks guys a whole bunch of preening, flash clothes, labelled clothing, first class accommodation, but we can't do that for our female Silver Ferns or for any of the other sports? Why is it that we're so unbalanced in what we support? And that's the issue. We lose 1.2 billion a year in congested travel in Auckland alone because we're one third of the population, yet the rest of the country doesn't want us to be investing in public transport or in proper, you know, infrastructure, and yet we're at a crisis level here. But, oh, no, 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 let's pay for motels at $2,500 a week for people who are homeless, because we're not going to improve the infrastructure in New Zealand for housing, for travel, for transport. But we don't mind shoring them up and wasting money that way, because that's easier than fixing the systemic cause of it. We fix the symptoms, we don't fix the cause. And that's our modus operandi in New Zealand, and it's a real problem.
When the Roman Empire was collapsing, they had these great spectacle games in the Colosseum, and the gladiators were treated even better than senators, and they were the highest paid people in the entire empire, even higher paid than the emperor himself. They were given their own personal masseuse. They were given luxury accommodation. They were given as many prostitutes as they wanted. They were taken care of as though they were the most valued livestock that has ever lived. And the reason why they were taken such good care of is because the population was crumbling. Society was crumbling. And the only way that they could keep people from realizing that fact is to distract them from somebody they could be inherently entertained by and inherently jealous of at the same time.
Absolutely. And that's the stupidity of it. You know, we're quite prepared to have rodeos and, you know, to abuse animals and abuse people in certain sports and things. We're quite prepared to have boxing matches and violent sports, but we're not prepared to support people in housing. We're not prepared to support medicinal cannabis. I mean, I'm quite sure a few of those violent sports, they wouldn't mind a bit of that balm. You know, support the core basic functions of health and wellness for our communities, but we're quite prepared to entertain them while they're poor and suffering. We're quite prepared to put a lot of money into entertainment sports, but we're not prepared to help people to be well themselves so that they themselves can engage in healthy pursuits. We've got our priorities upside down right now, and it's killing us. It's killing our community. It's killing the underlying focus of what we used to be in New Zealand. I grew up in a community, and it wasn't perfect, don't get me wrong, but I grew up in a New Zealand that was far more egalitarian than it is now. We didn't have class. I didn't even know about class until really the right wing started taking over and showed me what class was. I didn't know we had differences. My dad was a social worker and a prison officer, so I knew those communities, but it wasn't like it is now. We have lost it. We've Americanized ourselves, corporatized ourselves, and they think we can survive like that. We can't. We must have the Maslow's hierarchy, the basic concepts of what we need to survive in that infrastructure, so every New Zealander has the access to a home, to food, to the ability to self-finance. We can't do that at the moment with 92,000 unemployed, unskilled youth, and we're bringing in foreign workers to replace them because, according to our Prime Minister, they're lazy. But is it that they don't have housing, they're struggling with their sexuality, they're struggling with a whole bunch of things, and they can't afford to go into training, they can't afford any of those things? Is it because we're not supporting them? You know, and I know that personally. My son, when he was a teenager, couldn't get work, and he's mildly disabled, but I made him go and do voluntary work, and then I made him go and go to a shop or go to a company and say, I will work for you for free for a week, and you can see if I've got the skills. And he got jobs, and now he's in stable employment, earning a pretty decent amount for a guy that lacks a formal qualification. And, you know, it's possible, but you've got to put time and effort into those kids. They lose hope in a very quick time when they can't get work. I never missed out on work at his age. There was no shortage of work when I was going through that time, but there is now. And instead of vilifying them, we need to support them.
The government of New Zealand, before the time of Muldoon and Rogernomics, actually used to pay out an enormous amount when somebody lost their job, specifically because when you lose your job, you lose your income, and that has a flow-on effect on society, starting with your family and ending with your nutrition and the participation in society was specifically what the government wanted to ensure. Because when you can't continue to go to the movies, go out with your friends to have a drink at the bar or something of that nature, you start to feel very depressed. And because the benefits were so high in New Zealand and we had a 0% unemployment rate, anybody who received a benefit after receiving their job felt so guilty about it that they immediately started job hunting. And because they had their full income, they could afford the gas to go to those interviews, they could afford the time to, and the phone calls and all of that kind of stuff, and it was beautiful. Now, that's what egalitarian is. What we have now is egoitarian, where the ego is eating itself because it's become so frickin' huge.
Absolutely. Totally agree. And that's the issue we have. And, you know, people are also much easier to spread out an uninformed voice and comment than it is to spread out an informed researched voice and comment. These days, alternative facts, fake news, uninformed opinions are becoming the norm, and the researched, informed, knowledgeable voices are becoming the abnormal. And that's the sad part too.
In a sane world, in an insane world, a sane man must appear insane. Now, people don't actually follow that through to its logical conclusion. My conclusion is that the world is run by insane people for insane ends, much like John Lennon said back in the 1960s. What's an insane person, ladies and gentlemen? A frickin' psychopath or a malignant narcissist? Somebody who has the exact opposite motivation to what in New Zealand we call a GC, which is a good, well, that's the rhyme of it. You know, like this is the kind of thing we're doing. And you go, what's the psychopathic mindset? And how does that lay up with every single policy that the government ever passes, the way every single organization seems to treat its workers and so on? It's, it's a psychopathic control grid. It suddenly makes so much sense to me.
I just think, you know, people need to get sensible. And I think In the context of medicinal cannabis, there's a lot of fearmongers, and they are dominating. And the thing is, they're fearmongers based on uninformed information, and they really need to start listening, and we need to get real. As I said before, what is wrong with an 80-year-old woman or an 80-year-old guy grabbing a balm and using that, and it's got CBD oil in it? You know, what is wrong with that? What's wrong with them having a couple of pieces of shortbread at night that's a medible? Or a little bit of chocolate, or a bit of fudge. Why not enjoy your medicine, I say? You know, there's nothing worse than having to take a drug that has a bitter taste in it at night time and you want to go to sleep, or has side effects that destroy your liver and your kidneys. Whereas overnight, if you just take a medicinal balm or a medicinal cookie, and you go to sleep and you wake up in the morning and there's no ill effects, you know? Yeah, we've got to talk sensibly about this and stop this emotional overload of fake information and start getting real. And I challenge Bill English, I challenge all of those MPs that are opposed to sit down and have a conversation about why they're opposed. And then sit down with people like myself and say, well, why is it working? And what can we do to make it so that the effects of any drug overdose or any drug abuse is limited? Because there is a tiny, tiny population group who will react to it negatively. But that happens with every substance. There's always somebody that's allergic. Someone, in the same way that morphine, you know, causes allergies in some people.
Well, it's like I always say, some people shouldn't drink and some people shouldn't smoke weed. But fortunately, I'm neither of those people.
Well, you see, I shouldn't drink. I do not make a great life drunk.
Well, it reminds me of what Billy T. James says about it. Well, I'm half Maori and I'm half Scottish, so half of me likes to drink and the other half doesn't like to pay for it.
Exactly. And I think that's the note, hey? It's, I remember smoking when I was a teenager. I did try cannabis and I loved the after effect. But then when I had my son, got into my studies, I didn't have time or energy for it. But I've got to say, I've been on it now for 2 years almost, and it works. And I haven't been stoned once, but it does work, and it works well. And I've got to say that I'm now totally convinced that that is a medicine that is natural and will have it. And it's a bit like rongoā medicine. If we want to make an analogy, it's like having a kawakawa drink or a poultice put on a wound. It heals. Manuka honey heals. And so does medicinal cannabis. It heals. So does CBD, which is now legal, but we don't have the rates in New Zealand yet, but that heals. And we need to be looking at what heals, and let's stop being afraid and have those conversations.
Well, what's problematic is that if you're having a conversation with somebody who has a hidden agenda and a financial interest in not having that conversation, it makes it slightly more difficult. And particularly if that person doesn't have a conscience and is has a track record of being completely dishonest. But yeah, there's a difficulty when you're an honest person who has a conscience. We mistakenly believe that everybody's like that. But they're not. There are people who do not think like we do.
Todd Barclay was a tobacco lobbyist, and look where he's ended up. Talk about the case in point. No lobbyists should be having access where they can unduly influence, but citizens can argue a point if they want to, but not a tobacco company, not companies. Companies need to not be allowed to do that political lobbying. That should not be allowed, but citizens who see the benefit in something should have the right to be able to lobby. And for me personally, if I could ban alcohol tomorrow, I would, because of the destruction it's caused my family and all of that. However, I'm aware that some people don't have those problems, so why should I make that prohibitive? Because all that does is make it underground, everybody does their homebrew.
When prohibition actually first kicked off in the United States, the level of alcoholism and damage from alcohol that was happening to people skyrocketed absolutely massively. Now, what happened to the amount of damage that was being done to people when cannabis was made illegal? It started to go up massively, not because of the drug itself, but because of the organized crime that started to make money off of an illegal black market product. Now, here's the thing. Bill English, Peter Dunn, whomever can make this decision, understand this. Every moment that you keep cannabis illegal, not only are people suffering and dying as a direct result of your decisions, but you have no excuse to do what you're doing, all right? That's the ultimate thing. There is the consequences of your actions and the fact that there is no justification in them, and people need to understand that dynamic.
Yep, and I think that's the thing. I think a lot of them, and they're my generation, so I would take it down to the education of Reefer Madness, which came out under FBI and CIA and how they tried to basically demonize people of color in America. And by criminalizing them and finding an excuse, they had a workforce that they could have for free and keep them in some form of indentured slavery, which is their modern prisons, their private prisons in particular. And the same problem in New Zealand, when we have the majority of people in prison are Māori, and like 51.3% of men in prison are Māori, and 53-point-something% of women in prison are Māori. And a lot of it is for non-violent offences. And a lot of it is drugs and alcohol, stealing for drugs and alcohol, things that they shouldn't need to be in jail for, but things where we could work with them to educate them, help them, and bring, and by decriminalizing, charge a fine. You know, if someone's out smoking on the street and they're smoking around children, charge them a fine. If they're smoking in their own home, leave them alone. You know, but it inevitably, any of this prohibition is going to have a harder effect on Indigenous peoples, people of colour, poor people, marginalised people than it does on the corporates of rich and the white. And that's the reality. When I work on the North Shore, I had a staff member who's since resigned, a Pākehā woman, and she turned around and said to me, just make it illegal. She said, I smoke with the judges, the lawyers. I smoke with all these highbrow people all the time. It's okay, just smoke. And I looked at her and I said, oh, I live in South Auckland. And I'm Māori. I can't, because I will be stopped. I will be arrested. She openly smokes them. I said, I know. I was a lawyer. I know how many lawyers out there are using this stuff. How many out there are using the harder stuff? How many of them are alcoholics and drink themselves to death? How many judges out there use it? There's a lot to them. It's hypocritical because they don't speak out. But the citizens like myself who had no power in the structure speaks out. Those, they don't, and they use it all the time. So why are
they got something to lose? They got something to lose. All right.
Why do I?
They value their.
I'm not going to be quiet.
Well, this is the difference between you and me and these people, all right, is that we know we've got something to lose, but we understand that what we can lose is nothing by comparison to what society loses if we do nothing.
Exactly. We lose much greater than they will ever lose. And, I mean, I have to laugh because I remember the time when the high-profile actors, I think it was, or comedians or whatever were up on, or high-profile Kiwis were up on big drug charges. All the lawyers I knew were scrambling. We all knew about who it was and what was happening way before it went in the media because our own little legal network was telling everyone. Half of them are bloody users themselves. So, I mean, you know, it reeks of hypocrisy. And the whole reason why I came public is I did not want to reek of that hypocrisy. I decided that if I'm going to do this, then I will let them know because you've got to make a stand. Someone has to make a stand somewhere because it is an unjust law that exists right now and that we have an obligation. And I know that it was said by one of the presidents who himself was a bit corrupt, but it was also said by Martin Luther King Jr., is that if you do, that it is our obligation, our duty to break an unjust law. So I guess I'm more and more in line. I'm uncomfortable with it. I don't like going to a lot of the J-Days and things because I'm uncomfortable with recreational, but I don't interfere or say anything because that's their journey. But honestly, we should be openly allowed to be able to follow our conscience when it comes to having rights to access medicinal cannabis. And now I would say recreational.
Now, to the lawyers and doctors and all you addicts out there, how ironic do you find it that somebody who is in a wheelchair is making a stand when you don't?
Maybe they're afraid of their incomes being affected. But you know what? They wouldn't lose respect. People would gain higher respect for them if they spoke out. People would grow to respect them. And I'll tell you what now, if I had a doctor that spoke out or a lawyer that spoke out and I needed their services, I would go to that lawyer, that doctor. I won't go to those who hide behind the truth and then try and demonize me for wanting to access that very same product.
That's indeed true. One time that I remember the effect of cannabis, and I'll never forget it, is when my mate Barry, who has MS like you, not anywhere near as bad as your condition is at this point though, but we were walking up Queen Street and he hadn't had a smoke that day.
Yeah.
And, so I had a little bit on me, so I gave him a pipe and then all of a sudden I was actually having trouble catching up with him. You know, he was just moving up that street faster than me, and it was like, oh my God. And see, that's the thing. Smoking is an instant thing. It's like intravenous, but it just instantly has that effect. That's why it's so good for instant pain relief for those people who suffer chronic conditions.
Absolutely, and it's very effective for neuropathic pain, which is very endemic in MS anyway, and it's extremely effective. And I mean, I'm at the point where once I've gotten rid of this lung infection, where I feel well enough to get on a walker again and start exercising at home to strengthen my leg muscles again. Now, I'm not saying it's not a cure. Don't get me wrong. I'm still progressing. But I may be able to strengthen my leg muscles so I can keep myself more ambulant than what I do right now, more mobile. And that is directly a result of using medicinal cannabis. It's not the result of using any of the pharmaceuticals because they're hopeless. The side effects on those things are that they will kill you. If they don't kill you straight away, they'll kill you through damaging your liver, your kidneys, or your heart, or whatever other organ. So I would rather, if I'm going to die, I'd rather die happy than I'd die in pain.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, I always thought it would be interesting to have a warning label on your cannabis. Warning, consumption may make you happy, hungry, thirsty, and sleepy.
Even the myth of hunger, like, yeah, if you smoke it, I think you will because the THC, the psychoactive side, will make you hungry. But I've actually lost 21 kilos and I've gone from pre-diabetic to non-diabetic. And so that comes directly down to not filling my body up with opiates, steroids, which gave me a huge hankering for sugar. And sugar's really addictive. And I actually don't really enjoy much sugar anymore. I might have a couple of chocolate bars a week, But that's a treat, and I find I can't eat the whole thing at once. I have to break it down, whereas I used to gobble those things like lollies. And so it changes what's going on inside. I can't even explain it. And Sativex didn't even do that. Well, you know, yeah, it's, but what happened with Sativex, it's very pharmaceutically altered. It's still cannabis, but it's got alcohol spray, it's got peppermint oil, and, you know, and it's not quite as effective as Tilray, which is just grapeseed oil, cannabis oil. But what I've noticed with Tilray is that things are healing inside. I can feel my, you know, I'm getting normal digestion now. I'm getting normal body function now. I don't crave anymore. I don't even snack very much in between. And so what's happening is my body is slowly rejigging itself back into a normal function. It's not going to cure me, but it's going to give me a chance of having good health for a lot longer than I have now.
Indeed. Dr. Huhana Hickey has been my guest, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you so much for spending the time with me today, sweetheart. It's been absolutely wonderful and beautiful and fantastic and various
such
other nice
pleasure.
Adjectives. Yeah, I get that effect on people. Now, ladies and gentlemen, please go to thevinnieeastwoodshow.com and donate today to support real media that actually tell you the truth and expose the corrupt scumbaggery media that just fucking don't. All right. We'll see you after the break, ladies and gentlemen, with the Anarchy Girl.
Welcome to the world's meeting place. American.
It's practically narcotic.
Freedom.
Oh, yes, I like very much.
Radio.
You're an American institution.
American Freedom Radio.
Since the beginning, civilizations have risen and fallen. Rome, ancient Persia, Mongolia, Britain, and now America. Befallen by natural disasters, broken families, moral decay, lack of preparedness and conflict. Don't let this happen to you. Are you prepared? Would you like to help others prepare? AmericanSurvivalWholesale.com is looking for distributors. Email bugoutamerica@usa.com. Go to AmericanSurvivalWholesale.com, a veteran-owned and operated company. But do it today.
Quality, value, style, service, selection, convenience, economy, savings, performance, experience, hospitality, low rates, friendly service, name brands, easy terms, affordable prices, money back guarantee, free installation. Free admission, free appraisal, free alterations, free delivery, free estimates, free home trial, and free parking. No cash, no problem, no kidding. No fuss, no muss, no risk, no obligation, no red tape, no down payment, no entry fee, no hidden charges, no purchase necessary, no one will call on you, no payments or interest till September. But limited time only, though, so act now, order today, send no money, offer good while supplies last, two to a customer, each item sold separately, batteries not included, mileage may vary, all sales are final, allow 6 weeks for delivery, some items not available, some assembly required, some restrictions may apply. So come on in. Come on in. Thank you. Come on in. Thank you. So come on in. Come on in for a free demonstration and a free consultation with our friendly professional staff. Our experienced and knowledgeable sales representatives will help you make a selection that's just right for you and just right for your budget. And say, don't forget to pick up your free gift, a classic deluxe custom designer luxury prestige high-quality premium select gourmet pocket pencil sharpener. Yours for the asking, no purchase necessary. It's our way of saying thank you. And if you act now, we'll include an extra added free complimentary bonus gift, a classic deluxe custom designer luxury prestige high quality premium select gourmet combination key ring, magnifying glass, and garden hose in a genuine imitation leather style carrying case with authentic vinyl trim. Yours for the asking, no purchase necessary. It's our way of saying thank you. Actually, it's our way of saying bend over just a little bit farther.
What has American Freedom Radio ever done for us? provide us with free education?
Well, that's obviously a factor, but apart from reversing the dumbing down of America...
All the information they provide is free?
What about the free podium for broadcast activists to speak from, man?
Exploiting commonplace corruption?
They help vulnerable people who don't have a voice?
Bringing light to important information nobody else does.
Well, they never sent so hung up or cut off the guests. Well, that's not fun, is it?
Oh, they created a fantastic alternative media source during an era of bad, manipulative, and infiltrated mainstream and alternative media shills and scum.
Okay, well, apart from the free education, free information, free podium for broadcast activists to speak from, exposing commonplace corruption, helping vulnerable people without a voice, bringing light to important information nobody else does, and creating a fantastic commercial-free alternative media source in a sea of bad, manipulative mainstream and alternative media shills and scum, what has American Freedom Radio ever done for us?
Donate to American Freedom Radio today.
No rules, no rules, no taboo topics, no taboo topics, no fear of doom, no fear of doom. We are American Freedom Radio, American Freedom Radio.
Remember, remember the 5th of November, the gunpowder, treason, and plot. I know of no reason why the gunpowder treason should ever be forgot.
I pulled into Nazareth, was feeling about half past dead. So wake me up when it's all over.
I'm just a soul whose intentions are good.
Oh Lord, please don't let me be misunderstood.
Because I'm happy. Come on, if you know what happiness is to you.
Levity is good. It relieves tension and the fear of death.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, back to hour number two of the fastest 2 hours in talk radio. If you blink, you won't miss it. But if you listen, it'll not seem like 2 hours. Like, that's the general premise of that. Kind of got anyway, the VinnieEastwoodShow.com is the website which you can go and donate to support the cult of personality known as Vinnie Eastwood. But unlike normal cults, we don't lie to you, tell you what we think you should do, tell you what we think you should know, and give you our opinions on stuff or whatever, and tell other people how to live their lives. That's called authoritarianism, ladies and gentlemen. If that Shiite Muslim. Now, my very special guest is the Anarchy Girl. Welcome to the program.
Hi, how are you? Can you hear me okay?
I am hearing you just fine, and okay. Borderlining on fabulous is my standard response to the how are you question.
That's always good. Fabulous is always within the ballpark.
One can only hope.
It's always now, a safe one.
So, the Anarchy Girl, Lauren, would you please give us a little bit of background on who you are and what it is you do?
Well, I'm actually a third-generation anarchist. So, I was kind of born with the ideology itself. Always making, even in school, I always was the different kid because, you know, I wasn't indoctrinated. No matter how hard they tried, I was always the problem. So I went from there and moved to Virginia Beach. I had a daughter that was her 21st birthday. She was coming out of a nightclub, and she was targeted and beaten by Virginia Beach Police Department. From there on... I just came out with the activism and started Anarchy Girl and staying strict to, you know, the typical anarchist ideology, not bearing off anywhere and just keeping myself simple. So
for those who are unaware, what is anarchy? All right. Now, first of all, I want to define this for the audience. Anarchy is not chaos, all right? Anna means a lack of, and Aki means rulers, okay? So do you want a ruler, ladies and gentlemen? Oh, you don't? Well, you've got to support anarchy then. That's the only way to do such a thing.
Yeah, I think anarchy itself is one of the most logical ideologies out there, because it's not giving you the illusion of, you know, grandeur. It's telling you how it is, and you have to work on it voluntarily. It's not going to be, you know, simple, easy. It's going to be it's going to be rough at start, but that's where, you know, mankind wants to strive for consciousness. So consciousness is over in anarchy. You have to be conscious to be an anarchist. So, you know, I think it's a push where most people would be afraid to go, but it's the only true part of freedom you're ever going to have. So, you know, you can choose chains or you can choose freedom. And anarchy is freedom. There's rules, but there's no rulers. Everything's done on a voluntary basis.
Now, people are currently programmed and indoctrinated into a society where the very concept that you won't be told what to do, you won't be forced, you'll actually have to obey your conscience and take personal responsibility for what you do in society is not only an alien concept, it sounds like insanity to people who've been programmed by the system, you know what I'm saying?
Of course. I mean, when you're born in bondage, you don't see your chains. It's only later on do you develop that insight that you're like, hey, something's not right here. What is it? And you see how thick the chains go and how long they actually are and how long it's been around for. I mean, our monetary system itself has been dated back, I believe, back to ancient Sumeria. So writing on the cave walls during ancient Egypt, they were telling you they were enslaved. The Sumerian people were telling you they were enslaved. You're still enslaved. Nothing has changed.
The more things change, the more they stay the same. And, of course, you know, the interesting thing is what do politicians campaign on a platform of after you've been really sick of the last campaign? Oh, they're going to campaign on a platform of change. And does anything change? No. Get used to it. What did you make of the alternative media, so-called alternative media in the United States, just going full on?
We need Trump to save us. We need our Messiah.
Yeah. Unfortunately, I'm graced with not having a television, so I don't have the weapon coming at me, so I don't really know what goes on mainstream media anymore.
You live a blessed life.
No, it's a lot easier to give up than what people think, but I stay tuned to, like alternative media. You know, I'll watch Buzzsaw. I'll go ahead and, you know, the anti-media, Free Thought Project. So we all know, you know, what's going on and what's not going on. So I kind of stay within that loop and try not to pollute my mind with straight propaganda.
You know, that's actually not too bad a point there, really. I had to actually think about this for a moment. You know, I don't have the TV either. And not only that, but I never... almost never watch anything mainstream media on the internet unless it's to rip seven colors of crap out of them, you know, in an edited fashion, you know, like the one thing that I love doing, and this has really given me, it just warms the cockles. Maybe other things other than the cockle, but doing a hit piece on a hit piece. All right, so you get a mainstream media hit piece against, like, the Vax documentary or something like that, and you go line-by-line accounting basis, just go, this is a lie, and this was the truth, this is the lie, and this was the truth, and so on and so forth, and it makes you feel good doing that because you're confronting the very bollocks that other people are using as a justification to curtail your freedoms.
Yeah. Well, you know, mainstream media also has a way of taking something, a subjective opinion, and making it seem like it's fact. And, you know, the rest of the herd will run with it. So, you know, I think there's a whole lack of education, of common sense, logic, morality. give it the whole nine yards. I think when they indoctrinate everybody, it's such on a minute level. It's fed on ego and fear. So of course they're going to come out. I believe we're all, you know, we're in one big mental asylum. Nobody is well. There's a percent of people that are making sense, but to the average, you know, he could be, you know, I was talking to, you know what, let's just go there. You know, here I'm debating with a straight statist. I don't know what wing of the bird he is. It didn't really matter. But here he's naming off all his degrees. But you know what? Here I'm asking questions and talking to him on a level that has to do with logic and common sense, and he could not hang on. He couldn't get it.
That's why I left university, because I realized they weren't teaching me critical thinking. They were actually just critical of me because I could still think despite going to university.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, when he started reading down his degrees, it's like, you know, I think it was Mrs. Institute that says, you know, the self-taught far advanced the geniuses and the most educated people from different universities. It's I think you have to, I was shocked because I thought at least he was going to give me somewhat of a challenge, and there was no challenge there because he was lacking the concept of morality even. So, you know, here he's going through life feeding on sick ego and thinking he's probably righteous. It's okay for the police to pirate on roads and extort people, which is a hidden tax. And he finds that morally acceptable, and I just, you know, couldn't answer me why. And the reason is because he believes in a false illusion.
And that's the problem with belief in general. If you subtract knowledge and replace it with belief, look at the result. You know?
Yeah, yeah. It's a shame. You know, not even here. I just moved down to Houston, Texas, which is the battleground of pay next
obesity?
Door. That is one.
I'm sorry to interrupt.
Wow. Yeah, yeah, yeah. That is one. And, you know, they say that, you know, they're by the law. Okay. Well, I'm completely objectivist to this whole situation because, yeah, you can use their laws, but we're not going to go with the same game you've been running in each courtroom. Let's go by all the laws. So the law says I don't have to, number one, my vehicle's out of jurisdiction because it's got Virginia tags. Number two, I'm not driving, I'm traveling, which is a private, completely private from commercial. And people buy their plates and they do this and that. They register it. You're signing a contract with the state under commercial law. So, but there's also an exemption law. When you get caught for that, you can file an exemption. And that exemption is that does not apply to you because it doesn't, because you're driving as a private citizen, which is traveling. So I'm fighting that now here in, you know, the good old Texas out here. So this is my second appeals. The last judge that I went in front of, completely tried me. We had a bench trial. She tried me without the information. The officer didn't have the information. The prosecutor said that the information was in there, and there was no information, so me and him went back and forth. But in turn, they're not doing their homework because there's no – the court clerk signed a citation. She can't be doing that either, signing the complaint, as she's acting as the prosecutor. So she's operating without a law license. It's a whole big mess. I shouldn't have gotten to where I'm at because I filed my motions and my exemption. It's within law. There's nowhere they can go from here on out. So I'm fighting
nothing
that.
Legally. But that's the interesting thing with the legal system is that most of the time they don't follow their own laws.
Mm-mm. And they deem you wanting to be having your own inherent rights in this so-called land of the slave, the United Snakes over here. You know, the country's supposed to be founded on sovereignty, but then they'll go ahead and claim, oh, well, you're a sovereign citizen, you're a domestic terrorist. Yeah, you know what? I guess they would be in front of a mafia, because the sovereign person wants nothing to do with the mafia, but the mafia wants to suck on them like a parasite. So if you want them off you, they're going to demonize you. It's such a bizarre sickness. And then there's those who believe it and follow it. So you have to kind of defend yourself when they call you a sovereign citizen. It's like, how is that an insult?
Well, yeah, it's just kind of like the way that during the Warren Commission, after the assassination of JFK, the CIA released a private memorandum saying, hey, there's a whole bunch of people that are questioning the lies that we're telling them about us whacking the president. Call them conspiracy theorists, all right? Create an entire culture of ridicule and that kind of thing. Don't use facts or evidence. Don't listen to them. Just call them names, all right? Just do it. And I saw this beautiful, and I think this was the mainstream media piece that I debunked the other day, you know, and one of the first thing it says that America is the home of conspiracy theories. And that's why, because it was the CIA that created the conspiracy theorist term and weaponized it to use against anybody who questions the status quo.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. It's just to go through the things the United States is held responsible for, even way before I was even born. It's so detestable and disgusting that why wasn't there any, I mean, I'm sure there were some philosophers who were, you know, mixing in ideology, understood and was aware, but they didn't have the internet like there is today. So you can kind of spread it all out and more people can hook onto the ideology, understand it, live it, feel it, embrace it, push it, you know. Since anarchy isn't very political, it's a way of life. It's based on morality and principles. I mean, so a statist is telling me you can't live by morality and principles, then you're obviously the threat.
Just thinking about this as well, because if you're going out with morals and principles, I think it was the Libertarian Party. There was a big meeting here in New Zealand, right? And there were like 9 political candidates or something like that, but they only actually let 3 of them speak. Right. And I was thinking to myself, how is this really giving anybody a really fair show to really say their piece? How is this allowing people to, you know, use their statism and votes and everything like that? And so I went to the Cannabis Party. And I went to the Libertarians Party and a number of other of these rejected things. And we all put in broadcasting standards complaints because the media was literally censoring the frickin' opposition, right? And the one people who would not resist, who would not go, oh, let's actually do something about the fact that there's scumbaggery, were the Libertarians. And I thought to my, you know, oh, it's their choice to be corrupt and be scumbags and stuff like that. And I go, but where's your moral obligation, bro? Where's your actual sense of justice?
True. I mean, isn't it? It's like you're amongst the chaos and you're the calm in the storm and you're watching how people are speaking to each other, but they're completely missing and lacking common sense. Like the elephant of common sense is sitting in the room. How can you not see it? I mean, you have to be completely blinded and fully brainwashed to not see it. Like me, it bothers me. I see it and I want it removed. Other people, they just walk by it like it's not even there. So, you know, it's unbelievable. It's like it's like when you discuss with somebody about police departments, a lot of, you know, and I understand that because people have this overwhelming feeling of fear. It's been indoctrinated and pushed on you. Fear is not natural. I mean, it is an instinctual part, and it's very real. But the way people live in fear and they don't realize fear, because say something tomorrow happened and the police departments were all defunded and they were gone, people would say, oh, there's chaos in the streets. No, you would have spontaneous order at the stoplights. You would have mutual respect. You would see actually the community coming together. And that's something the state does not want. You can also privatize your own police department once they get normal used to this transition. At least the funds are voluntarily coming from you, and when they start the bullshit that you're doing now, you defund them. That's it. We're not going to pay for gang harassment. We're not going to do this. So a lot of people, you know, don't want to, they listen to the idea, and it's so very possible to have, but they want to scream, oh, it's utopian. You have that utopian idea. No, I have that freedom idea. You're telling me to leave a country and I'm trying to give you freedom. You know, it's, you know, I'm always told, if you don't like it here, why don't you leave? No, how about you leave? Because there's a million other countries that are so statist, you can find that perfect one where you'll be held tight into a cage. But just let us be free. You know, the anarchist always goes by the non-aggression principle. That's another, misconception. A lot of people say, oh, you know, when people meet me, you know, I tell them, listen, I'm an anarchist. And they're like, oh, are you one of the ones? No, we don't go off and destroy, you know, private property. And, you know, they're
it's like, I'm sorry, we don't work for the police. That's not our job. Yes. You know, I mean, we don't put on black ski masks and go destroy stuff so that the mainstream media can demonize the protesters and prevent the WTO protest from continuing. And so they can kettle everybody together and arrest everybody en masse. Sorry, that's not what an anarchist is. That's what police is.
Or they'll think that we'll show up to some type of political event. Number one, an anarchist wants nothing to do with any political event. The left and the right wings can sit there and beat the crap out of each other and kill each other. The anarchist will still be in the background just saying, I told you. You know, they just sit back and watch the fires ignite because everything is so moronically done. It's so immoral. There's no logical basis for any of it.
Oh my God. Brilliant idea I think I've ever had politically. You get everybody who's a statist, right wing, left wing, and you have a couple of Colosseum games, all right? And you let them kill each other while the anarchists watch and drink beer.
That would be a possibility. Definitely would be a possibility, yes.
And it would be less violent than the current system of government.
Oh no! Oh, and can you imagine? It's like you know they have this fear of the anarchist ideology. The anarchist ideology is the only ideology that's going to set you free. So it's not, why not embrace that concept, understand it, know it, instead of, oh my goodness, I'm afraid of the word anarchy. No, you've been indoctrinated to believe that anarchy is bad. You live in chaos. You live in towns and countries where you have to be afraid to, you better put your seatbelt on, or am I going 2 miles an hour over the speed limit? There's a cop behind me and what's he going to pull me over? Because everybody knows the distrust of what they are. They'll pull you over for anything and extort you. You are paying, you're being forced to pay for a service that sees you as the combatant. How illogical is that? Not even that, but if you explain the concept of revenue extortion to a statist, they think you're crazy. They absolutely think you're crazy.
They're part of a cult. And essentially, what is it? Cult plus time equals religion. And I think the statism is a religion. And
it definitely is.
Most definitely, the single most powerful religion in the world, because you can see it everywhere you go. It has become the Matrix. You can see it when you turn on your television. You can feel it when you pay your taxes and help your landlady carry out her garbage.
It is, you know, I think it's so harder for the person who's taken the woken pill than the sleep pill, because once you're awake, you can't There's no going back to sleep. And if somebody can pretend that they can live within this society, as immoral and unjust as it is, and they can go along to get along, they're not well. Like, no moral person cannot just sit by, let things roll. Oh, I don't want to make waves. No, because in turn that makes you the problem. Because as soon as you see the problem, you should address it. When evil is spoken, you need to bring light to it. So it's disgraceful and disgusting. I mean, I'm sitting here, you know, watching politics. You have a globalist agenda of their own government empire that is inside, you know, ruling this country. And you have the left and the right fighting to kill each other to get that, that seat on the throne. And here's the peasants, the slaves, the rest of us on the outside out here believing the delusions of the lies that these party speakers are speaking to them. And it's utter nonsense on both sides. It's both absolutely disgusting. And then there's the anarchist that's just swimming around seeing all this. And they see it. Like, they see the Matrix codes falling right behind, falling. So there is something to say about, you know, when information is given to you and you are knowingly putting it aside and not thinking twice because your ego and your family and your whole tradition was based on this illusion and lie, it's so hard for them to let go that they'd rather kill you than let it go. And that is the problem. And I think a long way, people who think on that type are sociopathic in some type of way, where the brain is not activating properly, especially the limbic part of it.
Yeah, and to explain that, ladies and gentlemen, just a little bit, when you don't get enough love from your mummy and enough protection from your daddy, your brain does not develop properly. You've got two different hemispheres. One is feminine that sees in color. It sees in big pictures. It sees in intuitively. And the other is the male brain, okay? It's analytical. It's very logical. Facts rule, that kind of thing. If you don't get those two positive influences, your brain doesn't develop normally. Now, within those two hemispheres, there's actually three layers. So the top layer there is your neocortex. That's mm-hmm. what does all your thinking. And just underneath that, that's your limbic system. That's what does all your feeling. And just underneath that, on the bottom of your brainstem, there's your reptilian brain. That governs your fight or flight. That's what keeps you alive when shit's going down, right? Mm-hmm. Now, what happens with, if you don't get that love, you don't get that balance, not only do the two hemispheres of the brain become retarded, and retarded means held back in development for the technical terms mm-hmm. out there, but also you get an overactive limbic system response to intellectual stimuli. So instead of thoughts coming into the neocortex, so you have a chance to think about them first, you instantly feel something, and the limbic system is intrinsically connected to the reptilian brain, so you instantly do something. So the normal person who goes, oh, let's think about that, then let's see how we feel. Okay, now we do something. They go, I feel it, I do something. You know, that's basically how it works.
And, that's how they react.
And understanding that dynamic, you understand how the entirety of society's idiots work.
And what's really scary, it's those same type of people that are sitting behind the desk prescribing, you know, all kinds of medicine for the normal person who doesn't want to live in this reality anymore. It's insanity. It's absolutely insanity.
Excuse me, doctor. I'm feeling really depressed. Well, why is that? Well, I'm not fulfilling my potential, and there's ruthless criminal sociopathic scumbaggery that basically run every aspect of my life and tax me without consent, and I can never actually have a real conversation with anybody. Oh, yeah? Well, why don't you just dope yourself up, bro? Like, what's wrong with that? You know, will that change the situation? Oh, it doesn't. Oh, it'll only make the situation worse. I have to take personal responsibility for my own life and my own actions and stop listening to people who are lying to me and make my own decisions and think for myself, oh, that just sounds like too hard work. Give me the drug.
Yeah, or you'll see them and they'll repeat the same regurgitated stuff, like the word snowflake And it's like Snowflake, you know, you hear that on, I believe it's the Republican side that's regurgitating that. And then on the other side, they use, everything's racist, 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 racist on that side. And you're stuck in the middle watching all this go down. And as soon as you put your two cents in of logic and common sense, both will unite together and attack you. It's yeah. absolutely insane to watch, like on a psychological level. Like that's how mentally ill majority of the population is. That's a pretty scary thought.
Yeah, well, trying to understand the mentally ill has what effect on the minds of people who are sane? They start to get slightly more mentally ill. The more that you understand craziness, the crazier you become.
Mm-hmm.
Not entirely dissimilar from the more educated you get and the more indoctrinated you get by the state, the crazier you become as well.
Yeah.
It's inextricable. I don't know the mechanism.
The self-entitled ones are just they might be the worst of the worst. I call them the self-entitled ones. It's the ones who always believe they have that right to be intrusive on you.
It's that characteristic of narcissism, actually.
Yes. Narcissism seems to be running rampant. It's the culture. It's what this is all learned behavior. And with some learned behavior, a lot of people they gain insecurities even from a very early age, and they carry that through into adulthood. And that itself is detrimental. So a lot of times people will adopt a false self within the status of self, don't get me wrong, but they're still lost inside. It's almost like you're watching them struggle, but they're comfortable struggling. Because if you go in to, you know, lift them out, they'll chop it off. So the anarchist is stuck between a position of, okay, listen, I want us all to be free. We all got to get together. We're all brothers and sisters. Let's try to do this. Let anarchy happen. And when the time comes, you fund for services that you want. Your labor is your labor. We can do this. Let's put it this way. You could still have an army. You can still have all that, because if another country was to step, they actually have to step on the land or have some type of aggression coming towards this land before you can go off and terrorize other countries. That's what, you know, if anybody steps on your land, on the lands, the mass continent that you're on, and they try to invade and slaughter and kill you, you're obviously going to need help to get that off you, because not everybody has the same anarchist mentality. People have this destroy, conquer, and steal. Like they're wicked like that. That's why
my friend Nick calls them Statenists.
Yes. That would be a perfect, it would be like the having, you know, the tares and the wheats, and you have your Cain and Abel's. So you kind of, you know who's moral and who's righteous and who is not. And I don't know if it has to do with based on some type of a consciousness awakening, but not everybody's awake. It's a very small amount. More and more.
Well, it doesn't take a very large amount of people to foment revolutions. However, I'm starting to question that logic a little bit here, because although statistically speaking, only 6% of the United States population actually resisted England, 3% of the Bolsheviks resisted the Tsarist Russia, and 1% of communists resisted the Chinese regime at the time of Chairman Mao. And what's problematic about all of those is they were all either secret society members, as is the case of almost every single founding father of the United States was a high-level Freemason. Many of them mm-hmm. hated each other, and
yes.
or they were Rothschild financed directly, right? As a false dichotomy. So then my whole hope of, oh, we only need a small percentage of the population in order to take control over society is actually starting to wane somewhat, because my faith was instilled in a freaking fiction.
Yep. it's enough to make you, but most people don't want to know or see that. You can't even talk to tell somebody the Federal Reserve Bank is privately owned. Though they automatically say conspiracy theorist. And it's like, what? What? Where is this coming from? You're always being attacked by every angle when you're trying to give them truth. Like, they don't want to hear it. They don't want to research it either. But they want to stay completely safe in that cage.
Well, you know, after somebody gets indoctrinated into a cult, the brain will actually form a number of layers in order to protect its programming. Now, this is actually a natural thing, and it actually is part of our evolutionary standpoint that has indeed kept us alive to this point. You see something, you believe it, you protect it, right? However, what happens is you've got the grief process. As soon as you start to let go of something, the first thing that happens is you go into full blank denial, all right? And everybody who's ever tried to tell the truth to somebody who's indoctrinated into the Satanist cult knows exactly what I'm talking about. No, no, it's not that way. It's not that way. And then after that, they get angry, usually with you, not with the people who are fricking them over. And then no. And then the third stage of this grief process is bargaining.
Oh, but what if I just get a job at Monsanto? Maybe then they'll get the organic food from the tuck shop. No, it's not going to work that way.
And then they proceed on to part four, which is the realization that we have depression. Oh no, it actually is this bad. And I'm now losing my mind control and my indoctrination techniques that have actually been screwing up my mind for decades even. And now I feel really, really sad that I'm no longer under mind control. And now people are calling me disillusioned as though it's an insult, as if it's insulting to no longer be operating under an illusion. And the fifth and final stage, which most people, statistically speaking, will never achieve, is acceptance.
It's true. Never.
You understand the brain chemistry, how it works, and you understand the grief process. Society makes a hell of a lot more sense. Then if you start to understand insane psychopaths, it makes a whole lot more sense again.
You're just leveling up from there. You're just leveling up. It's so hard trying to figure out, you know, like, what can you do next to make a difference? And how can you educate on a different angle to all people? But I find it so draining dealing with people that are still inside the box, because the attacks, and I mean, there's only so much a human being's going to take. Then they're violent. It's violent attacks. You know, I get death threats on Anarchy Raw. I had a state prosecutor, you know, from another state stalking and harassing me on Facebook because I was making logic and common sense in a post where I was sticking up for another anarchist friend of mine.
How dare she?
Oh, they homed in on me like I'm always getting homed in on. And I'm just coming in just saying, okay, I see where you're coming from. Let's make a logical standpoint here. But as soon as you put it out, they just see it as, you're Antifa, you're this, you're that. It's like, where are you getting this from? I'm trying to give you some logic and common sense. It's not that I'm going in and I'm tearing apart your words or the way you're thinking. I'm asking you to find the logical standpoint in how you are thinking. They never want to go there. Never want to go there because there is no logic, common sense. There is zero morality. I think when people start understanding and living morality, it opens up a whole other emotional door in another person. It's actually treating people with respect and, you know, gaining respect, earning respect, working together, like using logic, common sense, being moral to each other is such a hard concept for anybody to really get. And it's actually quite sad because they've never been taught you know, how things could be. This is logic and reason. These are the parties in which want to rule you. Let's be honest. We're slaves on a plantation. These are your rulers. You have to pick from one of them. You have to elect some officials. What they're going to do is they're going to write down laws. They're going to give it to their dogs, which are policemen, and they're going to enforce them on you, which is going to extort you so we can feed in the system and we can hire this budget so we can pay our political friends the profits, you know, for budgets and for construction or whatever they want. We're going to give it to our friends. So we're going to rob and be a parasite on you, but you get to pick the one who's going to do it to you.
And so that way, people think they're being given a choice. All right. Now, there was a study, conducted with children, and it was a study that's, well, the point of it was to see how we actually become satisfied with the choices that we make. Now, they had two groups of kids under two different separate conditions. First group of kids, they had two different chocolates, to eat. All right, two different flavors, and they had to pick which one they wanted and then rate how satisfied they were with their choice. The second group of kids had 40 different flavors of chocolates, and they had to pick the one that they wanted and then rate their level of satisfaction. And surprise, surprise, the ones who had way less choice were a hell of a lot happier with the choices they made. And now, oh, you got Republican, you got Democrat. Well, I'm happy with that choice, aren't I?
Yeah.
And that's how you keep people satisfied. And once people are satisfied, you no longer have to worry about them causing a threat to you and the system. Just got to keep them distracted in between elections, you know. It's just like, okay, participating in democracy. One time, okay, you get to do this one time every 4 years or something like that. That's the maximum amount you can contribute to society.
Yeah. I mean, it is entirely sick when you see how it all works. It all comes off of parasiting and suctioning off of the slave classes. And it's so disgusting because I don't believe really you can have a government actually working for the people, because politicians inherently want to rule you and have power. And that itself corrupts. I don't believe any noble man wants to rule his fellow man. So anybody who wants to step up into that position and take that into his pocket, I mean, you can't be surprised that, you know, all that money is going to their buddies' projects. And then people, I had somebody say it's for the roads. And I'm like, what are you? They don't even know how things are being done, let alone a court justice system. The United States justice system is so corrupted. It's the boys' club, and they want you to have an attorney in their boys' club. But the minute you define law, you start reading law, you start presenting law and fighting back, they look at you like, how dare you? This person is, she's out of her ballpark, but you're citing within the means of law, but you're being circled by bailiffs and you're the one who's being treated like the criminal. Like, how dare you want to fight the system back? How dare you not want to pay your extortion money? And it's comical, but it's not like who
it's satire.
Wants,
it's yeah, parody.
How can you say, you know, you ask any of those people that are like, oh, well, you know, don't call a policeman if something happens. Give me one person who says they feel so safe when a cop car is behind them and they're driving down the road. No, they do not feel safe. No slave feels safe. They think in their head, oh my gosh, please just pass me. Please don't turn on the lights. I can't afford to be extorted right now. This can't be happening. I'm so nervous. Why should a being have to feel that way? That just tells you right there, that moral feeling that it's telling you right there is telling you that it's wrong what they're doing.
Mm-hmm.
You're being already taught.
There is something wrong when a police officer passes you on the freeway and you feel petrified instead of protected.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, your moral, what's inherently in you, is already telling that person's brain, oh man, I don't want them behind me. I hope they pass me. I need to get away from me. They're not listening to their moral sense, which is already telling them it is wrong with what they do. But when you confront them face to face, they support the thin blue line. No, the only reason why I think they would support the thin blue line and put that on their vehicle, the stickers and thing, because they don't want to be a target. See, they wouldn't rather stand up with the rest of the people and say, no, this is wrong what you're doing. This is immoral and it's not right. God forbid they might make waves. So they rather stay on the team that they think is winning because that makes them safe. That makes them cowards.
It's true. And I think we all suffer from cowardice in one way or another. And my friend Penny Brighton's best activist in New Zealand, by country mile, nobody else even comes close to their level of exposing scumbaggery and consistent being in their faces and really just the most irritating flea that a big dog could ever frickin' hope to be infested by. You know, that's Penny Bright, you know, just ba-boom. She's
that's
our boy.
That's awesome.
You know?
Yeah.
And she tells me, you know, Penny, what you're going to do is do one thing every day that scares you. And I go, Now, why? Why do one thing every day that scares you? Is because doing things that frighten you, even though you are afraid. Now, it doesn't mean you have to do everything all at once. Another one of my listeners said, but Vinny, I've got like so many things that I don't know where to start again. And just like, look, just think about this. You've currently got about, I don't know, give or take, 10,000 things that are effing you in the a-hole. Okay, just think about just one of them. On a daily basis and get that dick out of your out. You know, like, bro, one at a time, one little baby step after another. That's how you eventually become free. That's how you eventually allow your morality to overtake your cowardice. That's how you eventually allow your logic to take over your beliefs. Not all at once. Everybody wants, oh, it's going to be so easy. I can do it all at once. You know, I remember when I went out and I was just going, oh, I'll convince everybody that 9/11 is an inside job in 5 minutes. You know? You freaking idiot.
I almost feel like I'm in a movie. Like living this life, like this life does not feel real to me. Like I cannot even, it's so utterly absurd that I cannot even get comfortable in it. Like I don't take it serious, Vinny. Like I don't take reality, like I don't have fear. I don't take it seriously.
Do you know what one of the symptoms of somebody who's been indoctrinated into a cult is?
What?
They lose their sense of humor.
They do. Wow. But you know, not everybody's stuck in that left brain dominance because you have, you know, there's people that I'll correspond with and speak freely to. Even just like if I go out of the house, traverse, go get something to eat, you know, something might spark something and I might have a conversation. There's people that are completely awake to exactly what I say, think, and believe. But they just aren't, they go about their lives. It's like me, I can't do that. Like I can't live the lie and be comfortable about it and pretend that everything's okay because it's not. I don't want to live like this. Like I don't want my kids, future kids, if we even make it that far, you know, I don't want them in chains. Like I want them to have, I don't want them to have or advocate for safety. I want them to have freedom. If you want to be safe, you know, you want to give up your safety and have freedom. Then you're going to be free, but you can't have them both. You know, a lot of people are comfortable being in their cages as long as they feel safe. But then there's people like me that I don't want anybody to keep me safe. I want to take responsibility for my own actions and I want to be free. So I don't want any safety measures. I'll handle that when the time comes. You know, I let's live. I mean, if you want to be locked down and safe, don't breed kids anymore that, you know, they're going to want to be locked down and safe because they think that bondage is normal. And then everybody else wants to be free. And these are the same people that are voting to cage you because they're caged. But they don't get the concept, you know.
Mm. How many people have it? Could you give us an example of somebody who actually, well, you said there that when sometimes when you're talking with these state nurses, you feel drained. And I know that feeling. All right. However, the reverse is true. When you're speaking to somebody awake and even if you've known them a long time or even if you have never met them before and you're actually having a real honest conversation, you don't feel drained. If anything, you feel revitalized. It's an energy transfer that happens. If anybody's mm-hmm. ever seen the film, the Celestine prophecies. So basically what happens is you send up energy into the conversation. Now, if you're talking with a scumbag, he will take your energy and sap it off you. If you're talking to somebody who is cool, on the other hand, they send up energy too. And so the energy they're putting up there and your energy that you're putting up there doesn't actually just instantly go and back and forth like that. It actually forms a nexus point in the middle where it creates more energy than either of you could create on your own. And it allows the body and the mind to revitalize itself through an open, honest interaction with other human beings with infinite soul potential. Beautiful.
That is beautiful. I was picturing it, you know, because I love that movie. And then here you're explaining it into the bit where, you know, you see your typical free-minded or your typical anarchists interact with each other. When we do get-togethers and we do like anarchopoco and all of us are together, everybody's sitting. It was pretty cool.
Yo, I can smoke anything, man. I can smoke that anarchopoco gold. I can smoke anything, man.
No, it's cool because all the energies jive and everybody's like, you could be all about ancient texts and philosophy. You're going to meet an anarchist just like that. And then it just flows. And then you come to another one and that flows. So it's like heaven because you're being intellectually, like the mind is being stimulated where you're in a dead society and nobody stimulates it. There's no connection. There's no life.
It's not just the mind that's being stimulated, it's the everything.
Mm-hmm. I agree.
Your body feels different, your mind feels different, your heart feels different, your emotions feel different. I mean, I've had my friend Ben Vigen here, a journalist from New Zealand, who's basically the most demonized journalist the country's ever frickin' had because all the things he writes, he backs up with at least 3 credible sources. So that means instead of being able to argue with him, they just demonize him. And we've been having a great time, man. We've just been sitting here going, oh, these voting slugs and everything. Bah! You know?
Oh, yeah. It's you have to give 3 sources, Vinny, because then they'll say like the first and second aren't valid enough. So you give a third source and then they're going to go in, okay, he's got the sources. So let's just attack him for giving us truth. For destroying the ego.
Yeah. It's freedom. You keep using that word. I don't think it means what you think it means.
Oh, yeah, you know.
Right. And this is the concept as well, you know, freedom's going to be easy, it's going to be fun, it's going to be fantastic. It is sometimes, but most of the time it's actually frickin' struggle, okay? Slavery is struggle constantly, but there's no real benefits to it, apart from perceived benefits that have been told to you by your cult leader. However, freedom has only the benefits that you bring to the table, right? If you do not defend that freedom eternally, you lose it very quickly. You know, it might take you 100 years to overthrow a really corrupt system and a very bad religion of Satanism. But if you do, then you're like, oh, sweet, I'm free now. Now all I have to do is fight for the rest of my life to retain my freedom.
Yeah. Well, freedom isn't given. You have to fight for it. So it's you know.
Deceptively titled.
How do you handle the concept when the U.S. soldiers say, well, I fought for your freedom and your rights over in Afghanistan. And you tell him, then how did they get over there?
Actually, bro, you were fighting for opium poppies and criminal bankers and scumbaggery. You know, that's why you're traumatized, because you went over there doing things that were really evil to serve the purposes of scumbaggery when you thought you were actually doing the right thing. All right? Is it coming through? With the heroin?
Oh, and they still don't want to hear that. Like, it's that's the false ego not accepting truth. They will rather live the lie and die that lie than face the truth. And that's, it's such a shame that kids are indoctrinated into these state school systems. It's so much can be better, beneficial teaching truth and logic.
That's right. The Anarchy Girl, Lauren, has been my very special guest. I very much appreciate you bringing your warmth and what's the other word here? The appropriate demonization of the scumbaggery people that defend their indoctrination. Yeah, there we go. That's a mouthful. Try saying that six times fast, ladies and gentlemen. Go to the VinnieEastwoodShow.com if you want to give some money through PayPal, Kiwi Bank, or sign up to be a Patreon and you get the... You can get into the Vinnie Eastwood Show donors group on Facebook. Just send me a message and I will add you into it. If you've ever donated even once, and you will get early access to brand new shows right when I put them up before they've been released to the public. That's the benefit you get. And thank you so much for supporting me, ladies and gentlemen. I know you really, really do value the service that I provide, and that makes me want to continue providing it for you. Not because I want to, but because I have to. It does need to be done. It's a moral obligation, not a choice. Thank you very much, ladies and gentlemen. We'll see you again sometime.
Mongolia, Britain, and now America. Befallen by natural disasters, broken families, moral decay, lack of preparedness and conflict. Don't let this happen to you. Are you prepared? Would you like to help others prepare? AmericanSurvivalWholesale.com is looking for distributors. Email bugoutamerica@usa.com. Go to AmericanSurvivalWholesale.com, a veteran-owned and operated company. But do it today.
And I hope people support American Freedom Radio. And I hope people vote with their dollars and really understand the value of having American Freedom Radio. Because that's my family. If you love me at all, Jack Blood, support American Freedom Radio. Like, my family has literally disowned me in American Freedom Radio. Danny and Don and those guys, those are my actual family. So please, please support these guys, because they have all the technology, they have all these great things that they're going to do, but obviously they can't do it all by themselves. So not only would I like to see you support them, I'd like to see you retweet them and repost them and really get involved and get on the bandwagon, so to speak, on doing that do-it-yourself promotion, because they're a do-it-yourself radio network, and we just need that so much.
Wadia will remain a dictatorship. Or be quiet. Why are you guys so anti-dictators? Imagine if America was a dictatorship. You could let 1% of the people have all the nation's wealth. You could help your rich friends get richer by cutting their taxes and bailing them out when they gamble and lose. You could ignore the needs of the poor for healthcare and education. Your media would appear free, but would secretly be controlled by one person and his family. You could wiretap phones. You could torture foreign prisoners. You could have rigged elections. You could lie about why you go to war. You could fill your prisons with one particular racial group, and no one would complain. You could use the media to scare the people into supporting policies that are against their interests.
You're listening to AmericanFreedomRadio.com, the network who perseveres in delivering intelligent debate, constructive dialogue with true independence. The freedom to broadcast the truth is not free at all. So what is American Freedom Radio worth to you? The empowering information with fun, honest and pure integrity behind it provides an example to follow. Friendships to flourish with the moral altruism that pulls no punches. The hosts sacrifice and show remarkable discipline in their duty to deliver quality radio in service to the community with strength, wisdom and loyalty. The founders of AFR wish to thank you personally for sharing your views and insights to make the best radio and alternative media. Now it's time for you to give something back and play a vital role in the future of America. Be as generous with us as we've been with you. Click on the donate banner at AmericanFreedomRadio.com or volunteer by emailing AmericanFreedomRadio@ymail.com. Vaccines, psychotropic drugs, and artillery batteries not included.
No rules, no rules, no taboo topics,
no taboo topics,
no fear of doom,
no fear of doom.
We are
American Freedom Radio.
American Freedom Radio.